Johnson. I'm going to switch gears now and talk a little bit more about environmental news, as we do have several developments that have come through over the past few days or so in regards to PolyMet, also Attorney General Keith Ellison's lawsuit against the oil lobby, and then just something that came across today, being that the Fond du Lac Band of the the Fond du Lac Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa are going to be getting some news in regards to a water tower they were trying to get built. So lots to talk about, and joining us on the show from the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, he's their Northern Minnesota advocate, is J.T. Haynes, who joins us now on the show. Hey there, J.T., how you doing today?
Hi, Brett. Good. How are you?
Hey, doing good here. So I want to talk about this Supreme Court case that's going to be coming up in regards to PolyMet, because, it was back a few months ago. The Court of Appeals basically struck down PolyMet's air pollution or air permit that was originally issued and approved. It was struck down. And can you talk a little bit about the background of that case and how the appeals court came to their ruling?
Yeah, sure. I actually think it's important to start by noting that PolyMet does not currently have the permits they need to build or construct a mine. The courts have actually struck down several permits.
Mm-hmm.
The news we're talking about here is the air permit. They've also struck down the permit to mine and the dam construction permit. And, of course, the water pollution permit is suspended pending multiple investigations.
Mm-hmm.
So because of this news, PolyMet's actually told the agencies that they don't have an intent to begin construction in 2020. So that's the general background of the PolyMet cases. In terms of the air permit case, it's about air pollution. That's what that permit is meant to regulate. But what's interesting about this case is this is the one that is actually about the size of the mine. So what happened here in essence is that PolyMet has communicated two completely different mine plans, one to Minnesota and our agencies, and a much larger plan to its investors.
So all the reasons that the PolyMet proposal,
yeah, a little bit of a difference. So it's a 32,000 ton per day mine plan that they've applied for, permits for. But to the investors, they communicated a 118,000 ton per day mine plan, which for those doing math, that's 3.6 times the size,
mm-hmm.
but at the same speed. So actually a year shorter. So essentially they'd be mining 3.6 times more ore in the same amount of time. So all the reasons that the PolyMet proposal are problematic to begin with are even more problematic with the mega PolyMet proposal.
And I think what was significant about this Court of Appeals ruling a few months back, and I think you were alluding to this, is that this essentially invalidated every PolyMet permit, correct?
Well, this would certainly prevent PolyMet needs an air pollution permit to construct.
Yeah.
So this certainly affects all the permits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's useful to note also that not only would there be more air pollution if this permit were to go through, but that would also mean more tailings, more water pollution, you know, a riskier dam. History has suggested that, like, when we cut corners in terms of risk management by putting more tailings behind the dam, it's actually riskier, too. So, yeah, in that sense, this permit actually absolutely does go to all the permits that are sort of at play here.
Yeah, so fortunately, the project, as you said, is pretty much at a halt right now. I want to go back to this idea, though, because as you were saying, well, they were giving different information to regulators as to what they were saying with the investors. At least on the side of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the MPCA, was it just the case that they weren't really doing their due diligence and trying to figure out that, well, they're actually trying to build a mine that's four times bigger than they actually say? Because that's quite a variance to have them be telling such a difference in terms of their plans of what they want to build.
Well, PolyMet's argument has been if they don't present that application to the agency, then the agency doesn't need to review it. And, of course, MCEA, we've presented evidence about this alternative, much larger plan to the MPCA, and we presented that evidence on multiple occasions before the permit was issued. And what we've said is, you know, if there is evidence that they have an intention to build something larger than what the permit application is for, that's evidence of a sham permit. That's
mm-hmm.
called sham permitting. When you apply for, in this case, a minor synthetic permit, where if you were actually pursuing the larger mine plan, it would require a major permit. When you apply for the smaller permit but mean a larger plan, that's actually called sham permitting. And the Court of Appeals agreed with us and said, yeah, if there's evidence of sham permitting, you know, clearly the MPCA should have reviewed that evidence, and they did not do that here.
The other thing I've been kind of following along with this case is that, as far as I can tell, on all of these permits that PolyMet has applied for, it sounds like their parent company, Glencore, is not actually listed on any of these permits. Is that still the case? Because Glencore, obviously, is a huge, huge multinational company that has a pretty atrocious record when it comes to labor rights and the environment. And, yeah, that's a big problem if their name's not even included on the permit, being that, well, they're the ones that are should be responsible should anything happen if that mine were to be built.
Right. And a lot has happened on this case, even since the permits were issued. We've got PolyMet's still communicating this larger mine plan to its investors. I mean, the larger mine plan is still on PolyMet's website, even as this case is proceeding. Meanwhile, this mega international corporation, Glencore, has officially acquired 72% of the PolyMet Corporation. Of course, Glencore has exerted significant control over PolyMet for a long time, and we've been trying to raise alarm bells about that for quite a long time because of their really terrible environmental record worldwide and their terrible labor record around the globe. But now they officially own the company, and this is one of the areas that actually Governor Walz has spoken to directly. He inherited a mess from the former administration, and he's making his own decisions, and his commissioners are making their own decisions about how to deal with that mess. But one thing he has said is, if Glencore controls this, they ought to be on the hook for these permits. And you are correct in saying that they are not currently on those permits. By the way, though, this is one of the things that the court has said that needs to be reviewed. So for the dam permit and the permit to mine, the court has ordered a contested case hearing. And one of the issues is about Glencore's role on the permits. So that case is also being reviewed at the Supreme Court. If it goes forward per the court's order, we will be having evidentiary hearings about whether Glencore should be on the permit.
What impact would that have if their name is required to be on these permits? Would that make them a little bit more hesitant to build this mine, being that, well, Glencore doesn't want to financially be on the hook? Or I'm kind of asking you to look into the crystal ball on this, but what would happen if that ruling were to go that way, where they would have to put Glencore's name on there?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. If Glencore's on the permit, that means more risk and more liability for Glencore. Now, obviously, what they want is maximum return and minimum risk. So they want to have an asset in Minnesota where they can extract profit and leave all the risk and all the pollution with Minnesotans. And having them on the permit, which of course is appropriate, would increase the sharing of that risk. By the way, that may not suffice in making it a good deal for Minnesota, but it would make it more fair.
Right.
It would make it more fair and a more proper balancing of risk if Glencore were on part of the financial hook.
Yeah, the environmental damage would still be the same, just we might get compensated from it instead of just having them say, oopsie, oh, I guess the state of Minnesota, you got to pay for all these damages. Yeah, the environmental damage is still going to occur, potentially, if it's built, no matter whose name is on that permit.
That's right. The environmental damage, when it's done, it's done. And it's not even a potential. I mean,
PolyMet's
own proposal shows significant environmental damage. Even if the 36,000-ton-per-day plant goes forward, we're talking hundreds of acres of direct wetland destruction, thousands of acres of indirect wetland damage, millions and billions of gallons of water processed and polluted, and hundreds of millions of gallons of water stored permanently polluted. So that is absolutely correct. The environmental portion of this will be on the hook for Minnesotans permanently, no matter what happens with Glencore and the permits, if the mine's built.
Yeah, if it's been, I'm kind of with you on that. Hopefully it doesn't get built, but yeah, as long as it's tied up in all these legal proceedings, hopefully that'll make them kind of think twice about this and eventually not building the mine altogether. All right, JT, want to talk about a couple other topics with you, and this one was something that just came down today, and I have to apologize, I'm not really up to speed on this case, but this has to do with the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Commissioner Mark Phillips approving a $250,000 grant to the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, where these funds are basically going to be put towards a new water tower that would serve communities in Monoman and Brookston. Can you fill us in a little bit about this case? Because it sounds like there was some controversy in regards to how this was proceeding. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so on June 10th at the regular meeting of the IRRB, There were 10 grants submitted to the board for approval. One of the 10 grants was from the Fond du Lac Band, and it was for a water treatment facility for the Manoman community. Now, importantly, the Manoman community is within the IRRRB taconite assistance area service area. So staff at that meeting made it very clear that not only does this project qualify for IRRRB funding, it actually also scored very highly. And staff also noted clearly for the board that the water currently in Manoman is undrinkable. So the staff basically said, this project should be funded, in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRRRB, the board, tabled the request. It was the only one of the 10 grants that wasn't acted on that day. And this was under the initial suggestion and leadership of Senator Tom Bach. And he stated fairly explicitly that the reason he said he was, quote, uncomfortable approving this grant at the time was that the Fond du Lac Band has been involved in, he called it, anti-mining activities. The band issued a statement saying, we're not anti-mining, we're anti-pollution. And I think the Fond du Lac Band and a lot of the community has roundly responded to Senator Bach saying, you know, the band has both an obligation and an absolute right to defend treaty resources. You know, and if they're involved in state processes around preventing pollution and protecting water, you know, that is their right, and that is not what the IRRRB should be doing and considering when they're looking at these grants.
I'm just trying to connect the dots right there. Even if they were so-called anti-mining, what would that have to do with the fact that, well, they need a new water tower in that area? I'm just not quite following the logic that Senator Bach is even using behind what he's saying.
It's backwards logic, and he got it absolutely wrong here, Senator Bach did. But what his stated logic is if you've sued a mining company, or if you've sued on the polymet permits, that makes you anti-mining, and you shouldn't get revenue from taconite companies. Hmm. You shouldn't get mining revenue. That's which is where the IRRRB gets its funds.
It is still. Go ahead.
Well, of course. The actual purpose of the IRRRB is to support and help communities deal with the inevitable changes of a resource-based economy, not to use the funds as a political weapon to force communities to support the companies. And, of course, I think that goes double for the bands who have the obligation to protect treaty resources.
Oh, absolutely. And still, it's the fact that it's having access to clean drinking water. I mean, that's such a fundamental right that, well, everyone deserves to have. If you don't have clean drinking water, there's not a whole lot you can do, regardless, even if they were anti-mining and still getting, well, money, tax revenue, as you're talking about, well, from the mining companies, it doesn't even matter. They should still have access to getting clean drinking water. It's just, wow, that's kind of unreal.
That is right, and the irony has not been lost on us either, or any number of people who have submitted editorials and papers around the Northland. You know, we hope sooner than later we can make some progress on that kind of thinking in northern Minnesota.
Well, at least sounds like we do have some good news, since the commissioner, Mark Phillips, did at least approve that $250,000 grant where that money is going to be put towards that water tower. So that at least is some good news on this process.
It was encouraging to see the reaction not only from Commissioner Phillips but also from the community. People said this is the IRRRB should not be using these funds as a political weapon. This decision was absolutely wrong. The response was swift, and I think it was a good move on Commissioner Phillips' part to basically overrule the board here.
Yeah, most certainly. Hey, we're speaking with J.T. Haynes. He is the Northern Minnesota Advocate for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy and expert on what's been happening with the environment in northeastern Minnesota. J.T., one more thing I want you to chime in on, and that, of course, is the big lawsuit we're seeing filed by Attorney General Keith Ellison against businesses that are part of, well, essentially big oil. What are your thoughts on this lawsuit going through? Because as I've been alluding to on some previous shows, there's a lot of parallels to the tobacco lawsuit we had back in the 1990s, where if the ruling goes in favor of the state of Minnesota and Attorney General Ellison, this could have a massive impact on how big oil operates in Minnesota.
Yeah, so this news came down yesterday from Attorney General Keith Ellison, and MCEA is definitely very supportive of the suit. We definitely think it's about time that big oil corporations are held accountable for having, you know, deceived Minnesotans for decades at great harm to the public. So this is a very notable suit. It's notable nationwide, not just in Minnesota. one thing that's interesting about Minnesota is we have particularly strong consumer protection laws, and that is the nature of this suit by the Attorney General. You know, there have been other suits elsewhere, like in Minnesota, there was an investor-based suit brought against Big Oil. There's a case proceeding in Massachusetts right now, and actually one was just announced, I think, today in the District of Columbia. But what's hopeful about the case in Minnesota is the consumer protection angle to it. And what that means is, you know, essentially, not only have we been deceived as Minnesotans, but we're already experiencing the impacts of this deception on our pocketbooks. Whether it's increased homeowners insurance costs, negative impacts for farmers, impacts on health, especially for low-income communities and communities of color, even changing mortgage lending practices due to the length of a 30-year mortgage. I think the Attorney General is appropriately asking, why are we paying for this? Why aren't Exxon and the Koch brothers paying for this? So, as you mentioned, that is what happened with the tobacco lawsuits, at least to a pretty large financial degree, and we think that is an appropriate result here as well.
Yeah, one of the important things to bring up is that this was filed in the Minnesota court system instead of the federal system, which is significant since, as you were talking about, we have some pretty strong consumer protections here in the state of Minnesota. So hopefully in the long run that does bode well as this lawsuit makes its way through the court system, which I'm guessing is going to be a lengthy process, but the end result could be some good news for Minnesotans and those who are for protecting the environment and trying to stem the effects of climate change.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Attorney General is probably geared up for a long fight, and I imagine his office is well prepared for it.
Absolutely. Hey, we've been speaking with J.T. Haynes. Again, he's the Northern Minnesota Advocate for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, joining us now on the show talking about some environmental news in Northern Minnesota and, well, the entire state as well. J.T., really appreciate the time today.
Thanks, Brett. Nice being on with you.